one, June Harris on piano, and we have also Scott Hamilton and the Scott Hamilton Quartet joining forces on this number titled Blues for Jean. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. Oh, by the way, that's from an album. Let me see. I wrote it down. From 1990, an album titled At Last. Well, you know the big news broke on Friday about this case in which there has been a settlement. The way the news media were putting it was that the family agreed to a $27 million settlement in the George Floyd case. Apart from your personal reaction, what I'd like is to find out, how do you see this development? What is it supposed to tell us? What should we be paying attention to in the announcement, not only of the amount, which is precedent setting, but also the fact that it comes prior to, just prior to the opening of the trial against the lead cop in this case, Derek Chauvin, and that trial begins this week. Jury selection, in fact, continues in this, getting ready for this trial. But I want to ask you to analyze, if you can, what the significance is, you think, of the announcement of this precedent-setting settlement. 888-874-4888. What should we understand about it? What makes it so special, and why is it so significant? To what is happening now, what has happened before, and we can anticipate what is to come in the annals of police and the people meeting up in sometimes very, very unfortunate circumstances. 888-874-4888. What is it that we are supposed to glean from this $27 million settlement that has been worked out between the city council and the family of George Floyd? Is there anything about it that bothers you, or anything that concerns you? Anything you think has implications beyond the strict matter of a settlement? Let's hear what you're thinking. 888-874-4888. Now, when I announce a number, I expect you're ready to go. But apparently, you're taking your time. You want to hear what others are saying before you put in your two cents. I understand that. But at the same time, we need to hear what it is you're thinking right up front. Don't be afraid. You know, nothing is going to happen to you. Ed from Queens, you start us off today.
Hey, good afternoon, Eutrice. How you doing?
Okay, Ed. Good afternoon to you, too.
I hope you had a good evening. Getting straight to it, I think it's appeasement. I think it's putting a dollar value on a human life. I think the state is basing its settlement and the large amount of the settlement on the reaction of the people had in this country towards the killing of George Floyd. And I think in addition to adding the extra charge, the lesser charge, better stated, this is just part and parcel of the whole package they're trying to wrap to keep the public at bay, to quell the public. Agreeable to David, this is one of the bones they're throwing out to the people to keep the masses calm, because they don't want another reaction like they had initially. I don't know. I mean, it remains to be seen. I mean, I haven't taking a pulse as to what people's response to it is. I mean, as it stands now, we're still limited by the restrictions of COVID, even though some social gatherings and things have started to open up again, some businesses have started to open up again. From my personal perspective, I can't really get a vox pop because I'm in the service industry, so a lot of my customers or clients I don't see on a regular basis, and that's where I would get some of my social perspective and, you know, opinions, or get a pulse on what the general consensus was as far as my limited circle. But I think they're taking a shot at it. I mean, it's a record-setting amount, and it's done relatively quickly before the trial. In conjunction with the adding of the lesser charge, in conjunction with the extended voir dire, in conjunction with what was first proposed as media influencers. I mean, it's turned out to be a really stinking fish. And I just don't think we're going, like I've always stated, I don't believe that you can have a DA prosecute a cop with vigorous intent, with an adversarial pursuit of the law. I think that they're going to acquiesce. They're not going to do the job that they could do or the job that they should do pertaining to holding this man and these men to justice. And I think this is part and parcel of the package to sedate the public. See, we gave him a lot of money. See, we added a lesser charge. Well, you see, the voir dire was so long, we couldn't find anybody who really wasn't influenced, and this and that, and this and that, and this is why we got what we got. Be happy.
All right. Okay. Thanks for getting us started today and on solid footing, as usual. Rob from New York, you're on the air. What is your interpretation of the events of Friday, that there has been this massive settlement in this case? And now what happens now? What do you think about this?
Well, I agree with what Ed was saying. And, you know, you talked about this kind of thing before where the families, you know, they end up getting some kind of money paid out to them. And I think it's just, I mean, it is an attempt to, you know, neutralize the larger dissent that's going to come out of a trial where we know what the likely outcome is going to be based on what we've seen before. Whether or not that's going to work, I don't know. But I think there's also another part of it, too, where, you know, the city is, they're setting themselves up to sort of play the role of a hero in a way. Because, you know, I mean, they can say, hey, you know, look at what we did. Look at what we did for this family, in spite of the fact that this was a person that was killed who had a highly questionable background, because they're going to, you know, no matter what, they're going to engage in character assassination, you know, regardless during the trial. And so they can say, well, hey, you know, this guy didn't deserve it, but, you know, we threw this money at him anyway. And so any people that are out there protesting, well, you know, again, this is just another example of, you know, people that have an unrealistic view of the world, and they're the ones that are entitled, and they're the ones that really have really not that much to be, you know, complaining about when you really look at what's going on with, you know, what's happened with other settlements. You know, I mean, that's part of a whole another narrative, too, where sort of like, you know, larger questions about systemic racism are being, you know, framed as something that's like a figment of people's imagination. And I think that, you know, this type of settlement action is something that's going to feed into that narrative also.
Does this come close to justice as far as you're concerned?
No, justice to me would be the officer being charged with either, or being, I should say, being convicted of, you know, either first or second degree murder, along with his accomplices, who were the other officers. That would be my idea of justice in this case.
So are you satisfied then, at least from the initial effort being made here, to say on the part of the council, the city council, we recognize that this is very serious, and that is why we are awarding a record amount of money in compensation, and we're making the statement that that is the level to which we hold all people culpable in the death of Floyd, sorry.
Well, I just can't look at it that way. I'm sorry, but I can't. This has just happened too many other times before, and it just looks like it's just something that's just done to save face. And again, the money is coming from, you know, it's coming from the taxpayers. You know, part of the affected communities are the ones that are going to be responsible for paying, making this payment. So, I mean, they're just, you know, part. So basically, they're taking part of the money that they, you know, that they've already stolen from these people and just giving it back to them, but in the form of a very small settlement that has nothing to do with the larger issue of criminal justice reform. So I can't look at this as being anything else besides a further lowering of the bar, regardless of how high the personal settlement is.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you very much. Some very good and strong points that you raised here today. Russ. No, I just was talking with Russ, wasn't I? Benji from New York, you're on the air.
Oh, I'm sorry. You hear me okay? Yeah, I just wanted to say,
yes.
I wasn't gonna call today. I didn't know if I was qualified to comment on this, but I saw that the Calvary wasn't responding quickly, so I said, "Oh, I better help."
But the Calvary responded quickly.
You like that adjective I used? Okay. Anyway, so but then I saw some Ed and some other people. They responded. I'm just gonna my thoughts and feelings on this matter is that this is an outrage. It cheapens it. I don't care what the settlement was. To me, this killing, I'm not much of a protester, but I went to protest after in Manhattan. I took off from work one day and I went from Washington Square Park all the way to the Gracie Mansion. I was moved to protest because of this killing was so heinous. It was a lynching, as you had put it. So this was something extraordinary. I consider this similar to Amadou Diallo, when I think your best, in my opinion, your best monologue was, and I didn't listen all the years, but and I also went, I think, to protest also by the Amadou Diallo case. So I think in this case, if you're going to make a settlement, do it after the trial. Let's see what happens with the trial. You cheapen it. It's similar to what you said about the Oprah. You know, it's all. But that's my feelings and thoughts.
All right. Thank you. I see you maintain a clear head here. Very good. Thank you. Brother David from Brooklyn, what are you thinking?
All right. I see this way. Because of the magnitude of the worldwide precedent of people all over the world reacting to what happened to Mr. Floyd. This is a fantastic bone that the ruling class has committed to telling its representatives who run the legislative and administrative branches of government to give out as a prophylactic method of dealing with the reaction worldwide that has come about as a result of this what I see as a second-degree murder. Now, they threw out this bone, and they also threw out a couple pieces of filet mignon with it. And I see this as a prophylactic means of maybe blunting any type of chance that this person will get a light sentence. And this is a way to kind of mitigate that possibility. And I say this because usually in these cases, they never give out that amount of money, or sometimes they give out nothing. And as I remember, Amedy Diallo, his family was given a very small settlement. So this is the ruling class sending the signals down to its workers, that's the people that sit in the legislative branch and administrative branch. Let's give them a little more. And then this is worldwide. We'll kind of blunt things. So this is what I call a prophylactic move.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. 888-874-4888. Russ from Florida, you're on the air.
Yeah, Utrice, a couple of comments. I saw the video. I'm not sure where I saw it, but they showed it. It seemed a bit, it was very long and thorough, and I had never seen it before. I know you guys have been talking about the case, and I was just, it seemed like the worst thing I'd ever seen, like how he was treated. And so that, I'll just start off by saying that. I mean, I just couldn't believe what was going on there, like I guess everybody else. But the one thing I wanted to say that the other fella mentioned was that the taxpayers are actually paying for this. So I wonder if you actually took a survey on the street and you went up and asked people, you know, who's paying for this? And I wonder how many people actually, you know, realize that they're paying for it. So the other thing I wanted to mention was in the video, and this video may have been on the side of arguing against the more severe charges like secondary murder and such. I remember when I was watching the video, the police officer asked Mr. Floyd if he was on drugs. And I'm, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure that was done. And then he said no. And the other thing that the video said was, and, you know, once again, tell me if I'm wrong, I don't know, but they said that he had fentanyl in his blood at a high level, and that that in itself as a side effect can suppress the respiratory system. So if you answer the question no to the officer that you're not taking any drugs, and then you end up being, you know, restrained and such, you know, if that ends up, you know, being a contributor to his difficulty breathing, but they don't think that he's on drugs, that might actually be an excuse that they could have. Well, if he had told us he was on drugs, we might have been more alert to the effect that it might be having on him. I don't know if that it's going to enter into the trial or anything, but those are some of the thoughts I had.
Well, I've said before that we are clear that he did not, this is George Floyd now, George Floyd did not die because of drugs. He died because somebody cut off his
head. Is it your understanding that he did have fentanyl in his system?
I'm sorry?
Is it your understanding that when they checked his blood, I don't know, is that an autopsy or whatever, they found out that he did have fentanyl in his system at a high level? Is that your understanding?
Yes, there was said to be fentanyl and methamphetamines. However,
right.
I still maintain that that didn't cause him to lose air. A knee to the neck that cut off the air supply via the carotid artery. That
no,
is
I,
what
I can see where all that. I'm just trying to imagine a trial, and I'm trying to imagine, you know, because obviously, as human beings, when you're watching that, you can't help, unless you're a sadistic, you can't help but sympathize with him, given the situation. I have a little experience. I had a woman I knew who had surgery done, and they let her take home the painkiller, and I was injecting her with it. I was surprised they had let that happen. But I remember her first reaction to it when I gave her the appropriate dose was, I feel like I can't breathe. And I'm not quite sure the classification.
We can't try that aspect of the case outside of a court of law. We need to get the input from a medical examiner and examine very closely what the medical reports say. But I think we're safe. We're in safe harbor if we say that the records indicate he did not die of a drug overdose.
Yeah, I mean,
he died because a knee was put to his neck.
Could it be? Could you possibly have this situation where it's both? In other words, if the knee to the neck,
we'll see when the trial comes.
Already is diminished in their respiratory capabilities. Then
we will see when the trial is on. Whoever is calling what to prove what, we'll see. All that comes out of trial.
Yeah,
but let us get to the trial.
I think that's going to be a tough thing because when you try and attribute how much of it was due to the fentanyl, how much was it due to the knee, I mean, it's just going to be, it's going to be tough.
Don't you think it's interesting that none of the cops were tested for what kind of drugs they had in their system?
Well, I guess, I remember seeing all these other cases going far back as Eleanor Bumpers and all this stuff, Diablo. And I always look at the TV with, you know, I'm just amazed at how they do not have a better way of dealing with difficult situations. Just because a woman's coming at you with a knife and you're three large men and the best you can do is shoot her or something. I mean, what about a net? I mean, use anything you want, but don't kill the person. It always sounds ridiculous.
Well, I happen to have covered that case exclusively, really, the Bumpers case. I was at her house, and I saw the damage that they did. They shot her literally at practically close range in her kitchen.
So the excuse is that she came at them with a knife or something, right? But I mean, if we had a dog
it gets me so angry, that particular case, because it was just riddled with lies, totally riddled with lies. And we had a psychiatrist giving permission for the police to invade her home and shoot at her at practically point blank range with shotguns in a tiny apartment.
What was the imminent threat? A knife?
We don't know what they said. Several. I spoke to several. What is that noise? I spoke to several housing authority police officers, and they gave me an entirely different account. So that's a case that really, really stays close to me. Thanks a lot for your call. Patricia from New York, you're on the air. What do you interpret Friday's development to mean?
Good afternoon, you Teresa, and good afternoon to the PRN family. You know, how many times have we been through this before? And the ante keeps getting higher and higher and higher, depending upon the level of response they think that they will receive from the community. So this award is nothing more than a bribe. to quell potential agitation and response from the community. You know, here again, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Malcolm said justice before compensation. And there are two examples that I can cite of this. In cases involving black and brown people, they go for the money. But when you have white people involved, they go for justice first, and then they go for compensation. The most recent example of this, if you remember, Utrice, was the incident involving in Minnesota, involving that white woman who was shot by police in the alley. Went, first of all, he's the only cop, well, he's the second cop that I certainly am aware of, who went to jail. And it was only after he was convicted and sentenced that her family filed a civil suit, because they wanted to make certain that the sole focus was that they got justice for her. What they perceived was the justice that they wanted for her. And that's all they were focused on first. They got it, and then they filed the civil suit. You know, we now, at least I interpret anytime we have these incidents, I already know they're going to go for the money because they're nothing but ambulance chasers. Same attorney, same strategy. Nothing that guarantees that another black man, woman, or child will not be harmed at the hands of police who are sworn to protect and serve. So again, this is nothing more than a bribe to quell the community. That third degree charge, again, protection against agitation and response by the community.
So this is a way of appeasing a potentially very angry group of people who are looking for justice, not a payout.
Again, whatever the reaction, whatever the verdict is, they're going to say, look, what more do you want? We gave you money. What more do you want? Aren't you satisfied? They determine what they perceive to be justice that we should accept, rather than us saying, we identify justice, and this is what justice means to us, and we will accept nothing less. Putting a price on a person's life. I mean, when did we ever do that? When did we think that low? That's our sole goal in life, to profit at the expense of someone that we stated that we love.
Very strong point. Very strong point. And I hope some people are thinking and pondering your question, because it's a pointed question and it should have arisen by now. Thank you so much for raising it so that we can't say we didn't hear this question before. We've heard it now. Thank you. Asher, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Latrice.
Good afternoon.
I have a question for you. Kind of a rhetorical, but a question nonetheless. Where is this money coming from? This $27 million that they're paying to Floyd's family.
I don't quite know what my name is, but sometimes it happens that way. I'm hearing all kinds of beeps and noises. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay. I heard it too. I don't know where that came from.
I don't know, but you cut out as soon as I heard that beep. But go ahead. Let's hear what you have to say.
Okay, I was asking where, kind of a rhetorical question, but a question nonetheless. Where is that money coming from? Is it coming from the Chauvin family? Is it coming from the police union, or is it coming from the city?
It's coming from the city.
So there's actually no punitive value in that money?
No.
Nobody's being punished, literally except the taxpayers.
Well, it's part of the ongoing pool of funds that the city operates with when there is a need to compensate people for wrongs done or perceived wrongs done by the city or representatives of the city, they draw from that pool of money.
But being that is doing, being that that's what they're using that money for, that means that other things that need money, other programs that need money will not be, that could be getting that money will not be getting it because cops.
That kind of money, however, is segregated money. It is put aside specifically to deal with these kinds of cases and circumstances. It can't be transferred for another purpose.
I understand that. I understand that. I was just making that point. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I agree with pretty much everyone else who's already spoken on the matter, except for that one influencer. But it would make more sense if it were coming actually punitive. It was actually coming out of the pockets of either the police, the police, what they call themselves, the Benevolent Association or the police union.
The police union. It doesn't work like that because in this instance, you have specific people, four of them, identified as the people who were directly involved in the death of George Floyd.
Right.
So I doubt that the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association would be the stand-in for these four officers should they be convicted.
Right. I agree. I know what you're saying to be true, but I'm just saying it would make more sense if that in a more perfect world, I guess you could would be a better way to describe it. That
But I'm surprised at you. It would make more sense in a perfect world. Where have you been living? What planet are you on?
but you understand what I'm saying.
I understand exactly what you're saying, but that is in a way wishful thinking.
Yes, it is. It is.
It doesn't work that way, as we know. But thank you. A good try. You made a good try.
Well, I just want to say this because if it actually were, it will be a good chance of these types of murders ceasing, because then it would be an incentive for them not, or there would be some.
Just go in your past 20 years. How many incentives have people gotten that what they're doing, their approach to policing, is wrongheaded, it's immoral, it's just plain wrong? How many more incentives do they need to take a look at this, not just the police, but the people who make these laws? You know, there's got to be a revision. It's long overdue. This cannot continue. It can't continue. Thank you so much for calling in today. Jean from New Hampshire, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. I also agree with most of what everybody said, but I really have a question for you. From what I have learned from listening to your show and the memory of Alton Maddox, and what I remember him saying, and please tell me if I'm wrong, that the settlement, as soon as somebody accepts the settlement, that makes the jury's going to go easier on the cop. And that as a white woman, from my perspective, I understood that the only way to get anything to change is if the settlements are not accepted by the families, because then the jury's going to know, okay, the family did not accept. They really loved their relative. They really loved that person, they are not accepting a settlement, and then they'll be harder on the guy. So from what I understood from Alton Maddox and your conversations with him, is that the only way that things are going to change is if the families make, you know, don't accept the settlement, as hard as it is. And that's why the money is so big, is because they make it harder to turn it down. So please tell me if I'm misunderstanding.
I think you make a very good point about the size of the settlement, which is an inducement to hurry up and say, yes, thank you very much, and let's move on, as if nothing ever happened. In rejecting the settlement, however, I don't know what the flip side of that coin could be. I don't imagine it applies all throughout the 50 states. There may be differences that states would have. And it would depend ultimately on the trial and the results of the trial. If up front they say, no, we will not take a settlement in this case, we want to proceed with a trial, and then they have the trial, but the person who is a cause of the offer of settlement is convicted. Now how does it get resolved?
Right.
Where's the final determination? Where does it go from there? I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that question.
I think I'm probably seeing it very symbolically, like, you know, that at least the way, because I don't understand a lot of the legal details, and but symbolically, there's something very profound about, you know, very, very profound about, you know, publicly not accepting a settlement. Or, for example, what the gentleman suggested, perhaps they could say, I will accept the settlement only if it comes from the police fund rather than the city fund. I don't want this money to come from, you know, so are there, can they put requirements on the settlement to give it somehow more power?
Well, this settlement happens to be the offer of the city council. And I don't know if any other entity could come in and say, well, okay, you don't want the settlement from them, but will you take a settlement from us? I don't know how this is going to work, but it's a city council. The city council voted on this. So technically, it's the government of the city of Minneapolis extending this offer.
Do you know who is advising the family about how, I guess they have their own lawyers, but they're not well known?
I don't know who is advising. I know Benjamin Crump was advising. But I don't know who is advising them now. And I don't know whether they have agreed that this is the family now. Is the family the client, or is George Floyd the client?
Well, it's got to be, can't be George Floyd. I mean,
yes, it could be, deceased.
Somebody has to. Who's the one who would the person who would legally accept the settlement?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know who has been designated as the
I just
person
feel like
to
there's,
do just
there,
that.
There's a lot of power there, and I feel like we're missing it. Like, there's a lot of power in that acceptance of the settlement, and we can't lose sight of that. That's all I'd like to say. And I hope I've understood correctly.
I think you make an excellent point, a very, very excellent point. I also hope that people would understand that it is quite possible that yes, we'll take it, was said too quickly. I think, you know, it's a large amount of money. It's hard for people.
Oh my God.
to just say no and walk away.
But it's the hardest thing they will ever do in their lives. And I believe that maybe that's what to me is going to change anything. It's absolutely, and they're going to make it bigger and bigger and bigger, so it's harder for people to say no, and it's totally understandable. But at the same time, just say no, or make it very contingent on very specific, like the cops have to pay for it, not the people, and you know some of it's going to go towards this and. Towards some kind of education program or, you know, something with that.
Well, I don't believe they have much leeway in calling those shots.
They should, if they're going to accept the settlement.
It's strictly, yes, we'll take it, or no, we won't. That's the only thing that is required of them to opine about. We'll take the money, or no, we're not taking the money. And I think before the offer was even complete in being verbalized, they already said, yes, we'll take it. So it will pose a little problem. It's not impossible to undo, but as it stands now, it's going to be very tricky to do the right thing and say, you know, it's their prerogative. It's their prerogative because they're representing supposedly the best interest of George Floyd. And they are legally entitled to transact this in his name.
Well, they want their cut too.
So it could become quite complicated. We'll see.
You could say that again.
I have always held on to that. And There's a merit in holding on to that way of thinking, because you can't tell. Things happen that we have no knowledge of. Okay, so let's hear what you have to say.
Okay. Greetings to you, Eutrice, and the PRN Least Stories listeners.
Thank you.
You know what? Jean brought up a point in regards to, you know, why they're taking settlements. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the reasons why Alton Maddox had mentioned about not taking settlements and the purpose of settlements is to release liability from the police departments and the governments of that particular district, because I believe the settlement is contingent on the family not suing or making the city liable for the damages that they have done. Because at this point, if you sue, you know, instead of just on that one incident and sue the whole police department or the city, then, you know, more can come out of it, not just restitution of money, but also, too, maybe some reforms that could be implemented, you know, by the court. So one of the purposes of a settlement is to not go any further, because obviously the settlement is a way for the system to protect itself. And it's protecting itself by saying, we'll give you this money, but you take it and that's it. Keep your mouth shut.
Yes, the offer is this. How much money would you accept to go away?
Exactly.
Just
exactly.
Get out of our hair and go away and don't show up. Don't darken our doorsteps anymore. What would it take? What's the magic number?
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. And they came up with a number. I'm sure this was the lower number from the original number. Maybe they did it at around 30. Around 30 million figure. And they said, nah, we're going to have to come down a little bit more. And they negotiated down to 27 million. And everybody felt that they could live with that. Has nothing to do with, is justice being served? Are there other contingencies that have to be addressed? Are we going to stop here? Or is this just one of the, is this the big point that we are going to deal with and then proceed with the other points, such as a trial and conviction and sentencing and things like that? All that might be off the table by now. We don't know.
Yeah, and Yatrice, this is also a way to basically minimize and also individualize these type of events. We all know police violence is systemic, and this basically takes the eye off of the entire policing of this whole country. And so when you focus on just one person, and especially this, he shouldn't even actually be the lone person on trial. I know the other cops are having their own separate trials, but they should all be in the same trial because it shows how systemic this policing is, and you put a light on what policing really is to people in Black and brown communities. It is a systemic issue of violence and terrorism, and it needs to be handled in a more just way. This is not just individual events. We're going to have another event where a white cop is going to shoot another unarmed Black person within the next year or so.
That much, that long?
Well,
it's gonna happen,
I would say
sooner than that.
I would say on TV. I mean, that's happening every day, but somebody's going to film it and put it on social media, and it's going to be sensationalized even more with that. So
So this is where we are. The big development is, of course, a monumental settlement has been announced, which means there's an agreement. And we have to be clear, because we have to also shine this light on the family, whoever represented the family in accepting this settlement will have to know that these are the concerns of the community at large.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, at least to our knowledge, there was no cooling off period. Let us think about this. Give us another month and we will think about this as to whether we want to accept this offer or not. Apparently, as shortly after the number was floated, it was agreed upon. And that betrayed the whole thing right there. People, the amount of money that they could have kind of got them a little dizzy. You know, they've never seen this kind of money in their lives. And I mean, put yourself in that place. If you start off negotiating, you have a number in mind. I can bet you nobody had that number in mind. It might have been a lot lower, but certainly not as high as 27 million. 27 million suggests to me the number was much higher. And they work their way down to, okay, we can't go much lower than this. But they ought to know that it's not about them, this family alone. This is about Black America as a whole and about citizens generally.
Mm-hmm.
This is not just unique to George Floyd and the Floyd family. This questions police procedures and policing in general across the board. And certainly we should have had some kind of an interim report. Maybe the family might have considered putting out a statement. We began negotiations and we were offered 27 million, and that's where we're leaving it. We have to give them an answer by such and such a day. Maybe they didn't want that kind of hassle. Maybe all of a sudden they became aware that they're just dealing with George Floyd, nobody else. You go negotiate your own thing. But this is what we are negotiating.
And just to let you know,
frankly, go ahead.
Just to let you know, Ben Crump is the Floyd family lawyer who basically negotiated this. So we got to look at him as well.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. This is it raises a whole subset of questions as to who negotiated, what were the points of contention during negotiations. People will say, well, it's none of your business. Except, of course, it is our business, because you didn't put tens of thousands of people in the street. You didn't raise a national consciousness all by yourself about this issue. So we have, this is not the first time I've run into cases like this, where there's a groundswell, an upswell of dissent on the part of the people, and then the lawyers go and quietly negotiate their thing. And the next thing we know is there has been a negotiated settlement. Well, hello, what are we, chopped liver? We don't get to know what the process was. So it's going to end up rubbing some people's noses in the mud, I'm sure. But we'll see. We see how they've handled it so far. They've, in my opinion, they've lost some points here because of the way they chose to handle it. And people are not taking this well. They're not taking it well that at the crucial moment when the decision is yes or no, we take it or we leave it, they decide to take it, but that was not done. Everything else was done in a manner that they kept the community abreast of where they were in negotiations. And suddenly there's silence about negotiations, and we get to know that it's a done deal. That's not going over too well.
No, it's not. And one more thing, Utrecht. You know, it's so interesting. Mike Brown's father got on and was talking about Black Lives Matter and all this money that Black Lives Matter has been getting. And he's requesting, you know, some of that money that Black Lives Matter got. But yet, a couple of years ago, they settled with the Ferguson City for $1.5 million. So at that point, I'm like, well, you got your money. What else are you asking for? And not to minimize, you know, the loss of their son, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, we're just talking about this issue of taking settlements. You accepted your settlement, so, you know, what's the problem? And not to defend Black Lives Matter as an organization, but at the same time, why is he asking for all this money?
Well, the thing about settlements that is very unsettling is that it's not just about what you will accept, the amount of money you will accept. It is also about what you agree not to do. The imposition on yourself of things that you say you agree not to do. You agree to hamstring yourself. You agree to deny the public information that people naturally would expect. They would know what's going on. You agree to lots of things in order to arrive at a settlement. And you agree, in the end, to absolve the offending party from blame. These are very important things to remember. When you enter into a settlement, you basically are agreeing to waive your right to sue the offending party. You do not recognize them as an offending party anymore. You're buddies now. You're friends. And you have to agree, you have to sign papers that say that that's what you agree to do. It is sad because you can also see the other side of it. That for some people, this is the first time they're being recognized as having some kind of value and therefore should be compensated for the loss of a loved one. But that loss is being treated no differently than you lost a package after you shopped and bought something and you lost the package. No more serious than that. So we have some talking to do internally about this development and what it is supposed to convey to the community as a whole. What is it exactly that you're agreeing to? And under what authority will you be transacting business in this particular instance and beyond it, in behalf, supposedly, in behalf of the community? Thank you all for contributing today. Incredible analyses. I like this. I learn a lot. This is a classroom. And I thank you for sharing so willingly and so freely of your the old brain in your head. Thank you so much. Let's meet up again tomorrow and talk some more. Bye-bye.